Everyone, you're watching InfoG Advocacy Media. This is the Journey Series podcast. I'm Mark, a co-host of the podcast. I'm a brown man with black glasses. I'm bald and I'm wearing an orange shirt.
And I'm Crystal. I'm a white woman with brown eyes and brown hair. I have on a black shirt with a colored top today and a brown background with a blue curtain.
And today we're speaking with Julia Duff, who is the executive director of the Spina Bifida Association in New York. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Mark and Crystal. Thank you so much for having me. As you mentioned, my name's Julia Duff, and I'm the executive director of the Spina Bifida Association of New York State. I am a white woman with dark hair and eyes, and today I am wearing pearl hoop earrings, a white cozy sweater, and a blue t-shirt underneath. And I'm really happy to be here. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for joining us. So just tell us about how you got where you are working with the disability and the spina bifida.
So I got involved working for the organization in 2015. I was getting my master's in social work at the University at Albany in New York. And I was placed at my first internship at an independent living center. So it is an agency that hires people with disabilities, and they do a lot of advocacy programs and services for people with disabilities. And while I was there, I had coworkers who lived with spina bifida, were involved with the spina bifida organization. And I also got to learn a lot about disability advocacy and what advocacy is in general. I was only 21 when I started my internship, so it was really, really new to me. And I was able to learn a lot in that first year. And when I finished my placement there, I was told about a case management position for 10 hours a week at the Spina Bifida Association of New York State. At the time, it was only the Spina Bifida Association of Northeastern New York, so I should reference that. And I was really responsible for just responding to inquiries from the community. So if someone was denied insurance coverage for equipment, if someone was denied developmental disability services, if a student was being discriminated in school or an adult was being discriminated against by their employer, if someone needed help finding housing or in-home health aids, it was really anything you can even imagine if you've lived in the disability, you know, world or been touched by it, that these people were reaching out to us for help. And it was a big puzzle to me. It resonated with me personally because I had none of the answers. I was, again, very fresh in this work, and it really motivated me to find solutions because it just seemed so unfair that people even had to call and ask for help to deal with things that to me seemed like should be basic rights. And not something they should have to fight for. And that really sort of bred my passion for working with the spina bifida community and wanting to make the world easier for them, because living with a chronic health condition should just be, you know, what you have to focus on, not fighting insurance or fighting with public accessibility, or finding doctors and service providers with knowledge of your condition should not be as, you know, difficult as it is. And so that was really what got me going. And After working for the organization for about three to 4 years, I became the executive director. And this month is actually year 8 that I've been happily involved with this organization and doing the work we do.
Wow.
That's so great.
What would you say is the, I mean, you spoke about some of it, but what would you say is the biggest challenge you see as an outsider and not having a disability?
Yeah, that's a great point. So I don't have a disability, and I also don't have a personal connection to spina bifida, which tends to surprise people since I am the leader of the organization. But I am here as an ally and incredibly happy to be, and very aware that when I speak about what I perceive as the greatest challenges, it's because I'm consumer informed, whether it's my board of directors, which has a large amount of people impacted by spina bifida on it, or it's just through direct service work that I'm able to connect with our consumers and really understand what they're wanting, what their needs are, what they'd like to see different. And a big issue, one of the biggest issues, is a lack of comprehensive and knowledgeable healthcare. People with spina bifida really are impacted in a variety of ways: their mobility, their kidneys, their brain. It's very common to have hydrocephalus, which is excess fluid on the brain, and requires the placement of a shunt to drain that fluid, which, you know, is brain surgery. There can be different mental health and learning disabilities that are comorbid with spina bifida, as well as greater risk for allergies and maintaining a healthy weight. So they can see up to 9 providers, you know, a neurologist, a neurosurgeon, a urologist, an orthopedist, podiatrist, the list, gastroenterologist, physical medicine and rehab, orthopedic surgeon, orthotist, you know, it just goes on. And if you can't find providers who understand your disability, then you have to be the one to tell them. You know, you have to make yourself the expert in the room without having a medical degree, or necessarily the tools to express what your experiences look like. And
or
so
having it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, so that's one of the biggest challenges, especially for our adult population. At one point, spina bifida was considered a pediatric condition. They, you know, were telling families, your child's not going to live past a certain age of childhood. At one point that may have been true, although we have older adults, absolutely, in our community who made that statement false, luckily, but we're dealing with an adult care crisis where there's not many providers seeing people with spina bifida, and those who do aren't seeing enough patients with spina bifida to get the comprehensive knowledge they need to understand it as a unique condition where every person is incredibly different. And how do you find the similarities to give them the best care?
And we talked with someone earlier, you know, for every disability, but that too, spina bifida too. The supports just aren't there all the way around, so that they're not sometimes getting the basic needs met just because there isn't that. And also the thing with that the disability community faces a lot is, or we're not worth the time, the effort, you know. So the why do we want to put the effort in to give us support where it's needed? But I think we're getting into a time in the world where people are realizing, oh, these things are important, and these communities, you know, the disability community as a whole has a lot to offer. And just because they don't look the same or talk the same or move the same or whatever, doesn't mean that, I mean, if we give them the right, sorry, if we give them the right supports, then they can give just as much to help societies, you know, advance.
There is the ongoing issue is that there's the lack of recognition of the value of the disability community. The stigma is, again, you mentioned not worth your time or effort. The other issue is you're deserving of my pity and sympathy. And that's hard, when you just want to be treated equitably. You want the same access and provided with the same supports that allow you to succeed that other people, have or born with or, are able to utilize due to financial circumstances. And in New York State, we actually, with our governor, there was the recent appointment of a chief disability officer who is really helping coordinate the major, commissions in our state to ensure that access for people with disabilities does not get eliminated from a lot of the diversity, equity, and inclusion work that our state is doing. Because really, in my mind, equity and inclusion are two really significant words when it comes to the disability rights movement and its history, and the fights that, advocates really made to get legislation passed, the Rehab Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and asking not just for not for a handout, but for the right equitable supports to allow them to contribute and participate and demonstrate their abilities. And it's really reassuring to be able to see that in our state because it does feel like that we're moving in the right direction. Where even I mentioned my start was as a social worker. And when I was in that program, I didn't hear people talking about disability work. We talk about minorities and underserved populations and being there for people in the most need, and disabilities weren't even mentioned. And it's such a huge, huge group of people receiving social work services. Or types of social work services in our community and from nonprofits. And now I have my own interns who come from the School of SUNY Albany and the School of Social Welfare who are letting me know that this is being discussed in classes now. And that's, gosh, 7 years ago, but it's being discussed more consistently. And it's those little wins that are showing the shift in mindset around people with disabilities having the right access to supports and recognizing their value, highlighting that value, and doing it in a way that illuminates, their capabilities and not what makes them different.
Right. And I think that's coupled with people finally realizing that if those people, we want them to come to the table with their ideas and their get, you know, their knowledge, but they can't get to the place to come to the table. So, you know, as that is the infrastructure is being more so that we can get out and do things. And it's not just with work either, it's entertainment or just being included in whatever we choose to be included in.
Our organization a year ago received a local impact award from our regional chamber of commerce, and that was the basis of my acceptance speech. Was, you know, when I got ready to come to this ceremony today, I was worried about getting lost and being late, and those were my primary concerns. I didn't get lost, but I was late. And you know, I said for people in the spina bifida community, they'd have to worry about if the parking spot that's marked accessible would be available, if the spot next to it that they need to utilize to get into their chair would be used, or if people would misinterpret those blue lines as an extra parking spot close to the door. And, you know, is the entryway accessible? That means so many different things to people who don't understand that even one step is inaccessible. And you know, then the bathroom, are the tables wide enough apart? Are there chairs taken away from tables so people who are using wheelchairs can fit? And really just making people aware in the room that if we don't open up the table to allow for people with disabilities to be involved, then what are we, you know, why aren't we doing that? And really allowing people without disabilities to see where they can be allies. I think that's a really big missing piece from the disability advocacy work I see. I wish that more people understood how they could be allies, how they could empower those around them to be allies and be supporters of what people with disabilities are saying, and advocating so that they have the access they need and the support they need, the policies they need, and
Exactly.
not having that personal connection, but just caring.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, like you rightfully pointed out, you know, the people with disabilities, we need, depending on what disability it is, we need lots of different health professionals and different kinds of support. But at the very core of it, if somebody doesn't listen or have empathy or understanding, then a paper on the wall isn't really gonna do a lot, you know,
For sure.
to help people.
You know, they're but it's so important to have all different perspectives, like what you're doing, being an ally and seeing the issues and being, you know, stop trying to find solutions for the issues, you know. And that's kind of why we where it is, but make some of why we do what we do, because you know, we want to, for the disability community, for the ones that come on with a disability, we want to share their story and have people like you hear the issues. Well, you already know most of them, but, you know, for people that aren't in that, they don't deal with the disability community, they don't know the issues, they don't. They're not around it. They have no idea it exists. So, you know, it's always our hope that somebody that has never experienced this before is listening and going to be doing what you're doing. So, thank you.
Yeah, I think people who either experiences that lead them to have a disability or being born different and having a disability, it's not something that we should be punishing people for. And sometimes that's what it feels like to me. Only in the sense of people aren't doing enough to make society more inclusive. And so in that sense, it just sends a message of we don't like, not we don't want you, but you know, you're not welcome. And it's just such a terrible message to think about when people want to go out recreationally, socially, vocationally, and that is the message they get when the building's inaccessible, when they don't understand how to employ someone with a disability. And I try really hard to be humble, where if I say something wrong, I'm okay to be approached and I'm okay to be informed, because I know I can't know what I don't know. I don't have lived experience. I can do my best to use my voice in my position to elevate those of my community, but I don't live with it. And I might mess up and say the wrong thing. Anyone could, but because
That's
of my
okay.
experience as an able-bodied person, I'm okay learning and just really focusing on the listening so
That's
that
also
I can
important
be.
for the person that you say something wrong to have that grace and patience to stop and explain it to you know. And as long as that kind of thing goes on with anybody having a disability or not, just being kind to one another, and that's all that we really need, I think.
I agree 1000%. I think, helping deliver the message with you said it perfectly, grace, patience, and kindness. It's hard when you get burnt out and you have to constantly tell people. That's what I hear a lot from the people I work with, is it's exhausting. It's just the constant education and advocacy, is exhausting, but it is great when we can take steps to make it something that can be approached with grace and kindness and compassion.
Right. And it's also very, very rewarding when you know you're making a difference.
Right. You never
Having a
know when you
disability,
yeah.
having a disability or not, if you can help somebody understand better, that's being an advocate,
Exactly.
So, what are you working on right now? Anything you'd like to promote, or
Sure. So
what?
October is Spina Bifida Awareness Month, which is always a very exciting time. It's a very busy time. We have a big approach this October. We're working on promoting legislation that would modify the state definition of developmental disability to include language around spina bifida. There are other disabilities listed directly in the definition, and we're seeing that services, developmental disability services, are not so easily accessed by people with spina bifida, because those professionals don't even realize it is a developmental disability. There's so many disabilities. You can't, I understand you can't be aware of all of them. So this is, a systemic change we can make that will hopefully open some doors for people with spina bifida to have access to services that will really improve their quality of life and ability to live in the way they want to in the most comfortable integrated setting.
It doesn't really matter what the disability is. Everybody should have the basic, same human basic rights
Yes.
and be comfortable.
Yeah, we're also we have a fashion show, a virtual adaptive fashion show that we do every year. We moved it to October 25th, World Spina Bifida Day, and we're really excited. We have about 24 models with spina bifida from New England and New York, and they're wearing about 10 to 12 different brands and designers, apparel, shoes, clothing, accessories in our show. And that will premiere live in 2 weeks and a day. And that's just a really exciting way to celebrate, again, the industry of fashion becoming increasingly more inclusive of people with disabilities, you know, apparel needs and wants. I mean, fashion is a choice for everyone, but people with disabilities, you know, can't navigate in between the different shopping carts, or they're too high and they're too close together and the clothes aren't made for their bodies. And how do they, you know, why is that? Why aren't we more inclusive in clothing? So it's a great way to really just highlight the brands who are out there, who are making a difference. And you know, you see the people you serve the way you want them to always feel about themselves. You know, they're beautiful, they're smiling, they're happy, they look confident, and it's just everything you want for the people that you're working for a director. So it's a really beautiful event. And we're also lighting up the country teal that day. So there will be various bridges around the country that will light up teal on World Spina Bifida Day in order to recognize Awareness Month and the Spina Bifida community. So Awareness Month is a fun and busy time and really gives us a chance to promote what we see as the real truth about Spina Bifida and the abilities of everyone we serve and how people can get involved. Things like this, like a podcast to raise awareness. It all really helps having more people know. And the more you know, the more allies you have, the more you can do to create change. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know you need to get to your other appointment.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this time and this conversation with you guys.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you, Julia.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Bye.